Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, May 14th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho Education Association, the teachers union, endorses legislative candidates, stays away from endorsing in the governor's race. Rural hospitals in northern Idaho falling upon severe financial challenges. And Friday's the last day for early voting in next week's primary elections in Idaho. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Tomorrow is the last day for early voting before Tuesday's Idaho primary elections. Latah County residents can register and vote at the courthouse during business hours tomorrow. The election is Tuesday, and polls will be open from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. People in Idaho can register to vote at the polls on Election Day. Republicans and people who are registered as unaffiliated can register as Republicans and vote in the Republican primary. The Democratic primary is open to all voters, no matter what their affiliation. The Idaho Education Association's political arm is endorsing 32 candidates in contested primary and November general election races, and 16 of those are challengers taking on incumbents. The teachers union is staying away from endorsing any candidate for governor after voting no confidence in Republican Governor Brad Little last month because Little signed a bill banning school districts from assisting unions in any way. They had previously endorsed Little in the 2022 election. The Idaho Education Association's Political Action Committee for Education used questionnaires, interviews, and recommendations from local educators when writing their voter guide. In a time when public education is under threat in Idaho, they were looking for candidates that have a strong commitment to public education. The voter guide also noted how incumbent legislators voted on the 2025 bill granting $50 million in taxpayer money to pay for some of the expenses of parents who can afford to send their children to private or religious schools. The IEA is opposed to that new law because it threatens to weaken the state's public school system. The union, along with the Moscow School District, sued the state over the program, but the state Supreme Court threw out the lawsuit after hearing oral arguments. The Political Action Committee also noted incumbents' votes on House Bill 516, which was the bill this year that forbids public school districts from using public resources to accommodate teachers' union activities. Even the voluntary system of having districts withhold money from teachers' paychecks to send to the union. They also noted lawmakers' votes on Senate Bill 1288, which created a $5 million fund for high-need special education students, a bill the IEA supported. The teachers' union has endorsed three Democrats who are challenging incumbent Republicans in the November general election. All three of the Democrats are unopposed in next week's primary. They are endorsing Democrat Amanda Easley, who will face House Majority Leader Jason Monks of Meridian in the general election, and Carly Easley, who is running for the seat currently held by Senate Majority Leader Lori Den Hartog. Den Hartog, who co-sponsored House Bill 93, the Taxpayer Money for Private and Religious Schools Bill, has an opponent in the Republican primary. His name is Josh Haver. The IEA PAC is also endorsing Democrat Valerie Ruxton, who is running against Republican Representative Josh Tanner of Eagle in the November general election. Tanner is co-chair of the powerful Joint Finance Appropriations Committee in the legislature, which sets the state budget and reduced money for higher education this year. The Idaho Education Association is also supporting three Republican challengers who are running against current members of the House Education Committee. They are Carlos Hernandez, who is facing Representative Kent Marmon of Caldwell in District 11, Alexandra Caval, who is facing incumbent Representative Clint Hostetler of Twin Falls in District 24, and Connor Cook, who is challenging Republican incumbent Barbara Ehart of Idaho Falls. In the swing District 15 in West Boise, the Political Action Committee for Education is endorsing all three Democrats who are running. They are incumbent Representative Steve Birch and challengers Nancy Gregory and Jay Etchart. In District 6, which covers all of Latah and Lewis counties, plus much of rural Nez Perce County, plus a small corner of the city of Lewiston, the Idaho Education Association is endorsing Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston in the Senate primary over incumbent Republican Dan Foreman of Viola. They are endorsing Moscow City Councilmember and Democrat Bryce Blankenship in next week's primary against two other Democrats for the open seat being vacated by McCann, and are endorsing Kathy Dawes of Moscow, who is facing one Democratic opponent, Kenneth Williams, in the Democratic primary. The winner in the latter race will face incumbent Republican Brandon Mitchell of Moscow in the general election. Blankenship's two Democratic opponents in the primary for House Seat 6A are Trish Carter-Goodhart of Lapway and Ryan Augusta of Moscow. The two Republican candidates in that race are former Representative Cindy Agidius of Moscow and Colton Bennett of Troy. Rural hospitals in Idaho are grappling with insurance denials, employee housing shortages, and changes in the Medicaid program. Hospital officials hope a $930 million five-year federal grant will ease some of the funding pains. According to the Spokesman Review, Bonner County General Health CEO John Hennessy and Benoit Community Hospital CEO Bert Keltner say they face challenges housing employees, upgrading equipment, addressing problems surrounding an aging patient population, and making budget work with the low cash reserves amid insurance denials, delays, and increases in Medicaid and decreases in Medicaid reimbursements. Hennessy said it's getting tougher and tougher to get payments on time, and due to those denials, so we're seeing our accounts receivable going up and our days cash on hand going down. The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare says the federal government allotted the state around $186 million in the first year of the rural grant program. Hennessy said the aging Bonner General Health facility faces funding issues such as a new air handler to control humidity problems in operating rooms. A project to keep humidity levels low would cost about $4.5 million. Knee replacement surgeries cannot move forward when the humidity is too high. Hennessy said every summer we've had at least a couple weeks where we've had to cancel doing any kind of inpatient or those larger cases due to humidity issues. Hennessy said the hospital's medical record system costs more than $1 million annually to operate. Bert Keltner of Benoit Community Hospital said the facility needs a substantial grant to purchase equipment due to the increasing number of heart attacks and strokes. The hospital needs new cardiac and dialysis care programs. Keltner said Bonner and Benoit hospitals are designated as critical access, which means the federal government reimburses the hospitals in one lump payment annually. Keltner said a grant for a startup nursing recruitment program could go a long way. Scarce employee housing has hampered the two facilities' abilities to recruit healthcare professionals. Hennessy said rising housing costs make it problematic to recruit and retain doctors and nurses. He said despite the beauty and recreation of the region, housing costs are making it increasingly difficult to recruit workers, and not just in northern Idaho. He said so they want to move here, but due to housing prices, sometimes it's just not feasible. So the same positions that we're hearing from other hospitals in our area that are also struggling to recruit those, which also makes it tough because you have one candidate and you might have four hospitals within the service area that are all competing for that one applicant. Both hospital CEOs say insurance coverage denials are nearly automatic. Keltner said, "I'm completely convinced that for the last 2 or 3 years, large commercial insurance companies have installed algorithms to auto-deny a lot of things right when they first come in, just to create more workflow for the people that are submitting. I have no doubt, because it's not possible for a person on the other end to actually make a decision." Keltner also said most hospitals' profit margins are about 1%, meaning a 10% cut to about 10% of patients would eliminate the profit margin. Keltner said the people did not build the hospital to be a profit center. He said, "We weren't built in order to gouge and make just tons and tons of money, but we do need to be financially viable, so we have to balance that viability with as many services as we can offer for the size of community that we serve. That's the difficulty, but we just have to keep in the forefront of our mind, and what keeps us optimistic is that we're here to serve."
Data from the University of Washington show the state's efforts to eliminate hepatitis C are working and might even be saving the state money. The study shows a state plan to eliminate the virus by 2030 has led to a 45% decline in new cases between 2018 to 2021. Hepatitis C is a curable, bloodborne virus that surged about a decade ago in Washington, alongside increased opioid use and needle sharing. Pam Kohler, lead investigator in the study, explains that a combination of more and earlier treatment led to significant savings over time for the state.
Initially, that cost went up as we found more people that needed to be treated, but then eventually the cost per person went down over time, presumably as fewer people needed to be treated with advanced medical care.
The study found the treatment cost per patient decreased from over $500 to about $125 per month over 4 years. Kohler adds that former Governor Jay Inslee, who started the program, also lowered prices for the antiviral drugs by setting up a subscription model with a pharmaceutical company. Emily Hurio with the Office of Infectious Disease at the Washington State Department of Health says the study shows there's cause for celebration, but there's still more work ahead. So far, efforts have mostly reached insured and easier to access populations. Now, she says, the state must focus on those less likely to have access to medical care or health insurance, such as people living rurally or experiencing homelessness.
We're now at this critical phase where the folks who are left with untreated hepatitis C are going to be the most challenging to connect to care and require the most attention and resourcing.
She adds upcoming cuts to Medicaid, along with increasing housing and financial insecurity, will make the task harder. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, established in 1973. The Moscow Food Co-op is a cooperatively owned grocery store that serves as a community hub and champions healthy, local, inclusive, and sustainable food and goods.
Teaching Oregonians to recognize stroke symptoms and prevent permanent damage is a major focus during this American Stroke Month. Strokes happen when blood flow to the brain is interrupted, and they're currently the number 4 killer in the country. Stroke survivor Claudette Kenmer says the acronym BFAST is an easy way to remember the symptoms of stroke. She explains the letters stand for balance, eye or vision problems, face drooping, arm raising trouble, speech, and time to call 911.
If you're having a stroke, if you can get to the emergency room or get an ambulance to you as soon as possible, that helps reduce what can happen to you. But if you know what to look for, you can really help yourself and help other people.
Kenmer says the doctor did not suspect she was having a stroke at first because she was only 45 and otherwise healthy. She adds the experience taught her the importance of managing her stress levels. Dr. David Tirschwell is a stroke neurologist at the University of Washington. He says the biggest risk factor for stroke is untreated high blood pressure. He explains the course of action depends on the patient, but calls high blood pressure very treatable.
If it's only a little bit up, your primary care provider might suggest a lifestyle change where you're eating a healthier diet, consuming less salt, and exercising more.
Tirschwell adds medication may be needed in more serious cases. According to the American Heart Association, about 80% of strokes are preventable. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. 20% chance of showers tonight. Snow level 6,500 feet, lowering to 5,000 feet after midnight. Cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy, low 40. West winds 10, gusts up to 20. Mostly sunny tomorrow, becoming cloudy in the afternoon, high 58. West winds 15, gusts up to 25. Cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy Friday night, low 38. West winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25. On Saturday, chance of showers with thunderstorms possible after 2 p.m. Snow level 3,700 feet, rising to 4,300 feet in the afternoon. Partly sunny, high 53. West winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25. 30% chance of showers before midnight Saturday night. Areas of frost after 2 a.m. Snow level 4,500 feet, lowering to 3,700 feet after midnight. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, low 34. West winds 10 to 15, becoming light after midnight, gusts up to 20. And a 20% chance of showers Sunday morning. Otherwise, snow level 3,300 feet, rising to 5,200 feet in the afternoon and partly sunny, high 56. Current temperature is 55. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, you can go to KRFP's website, and there's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.